All right, how many of you saw it yesterday?
The air show.
Huh?
For Santa.
John Stewart and Stephen Colbert? Huh?
Yes,
we should reason together.
No, we should fear. We should reason. No, we should fear. Dream of this at night.
Stephen Colbert. I read something that was curious about. I was waiting for the complaints, right? That's how our heads are set up. You know, because I'm going, what could you possibly complain about? It was such a reasonable thing. I mean, had music, good conversation, we should join together to make decisions, even though they're tough decisions, even though we're different, it was reasonable. And one of the articles, well, and did you also know that there were like 1,000 other events around the world at the same time honoring? Or so, 1,016, I believe. And so this one guy was writing, Dr. McCarthy, says, I'm not sure what it means that this was a worldwide event. I just thought maybe it was an outlet for people to share frustrations. It was from London to Tel Aviv, but I'm not sure. And there was such a lack of clear focus. And I thought it was quite clear. We were gathering to restore sanity. That wasn't clear. But then I also thought that reasonable people can actually live in ambiguity. We don't have to have everything absolutely correct and absolutely right in an absolute belief system. We don't. And I was a little upset because he didn't tell me what to believe. I sat there for 3 hours. Tell me what to. He doesn't tell us what to believe. Reasonableness. And then when this guy said, this is a worldwide event, how come it's a worldwide event? He didn't understand it. And I thought, well, hasn't he been reading the news? We've got a, according to some thinking, movement to the right in the United States of America, a movement to the right, how do they say it, right-wing alliance inflicts defeat in Sweden. Sweden's social democracy, the Dutch moving to the right, Australia eliminated a prime minister peacefully without bloodshed, they said, and another prime minister came in that made decisions that and favored economic systems over the social safety net in that country. We see what's happening in Greece. We see the riots that the pro-business people are taking away, in a sense, the social safety net in France, and we see the movement to the right. And so we see a worldwide movement to the right taking away safety nets in country after country after country, and then we see this movement of reasonableness in country after country. It seems to me it's pretty clear what's going on. And what are we to do about it? I don't know what we are to do about it. And I guess that's what we'll decide as a church, to do something or not. I certainly think our participation, some of us in the movement to amend, trying to gather around, because that is a significant movement, because it doesn't deal, in a sense, with a specific issue. I mean, it may seem like it was born out of that Supreme Court decision to allow money to flow through corporations as persons, because they now have rights as persons, and that's what got it going, and people got angry about that. But what the movement to amend does is it deals with the container of our society. It deals with the threads and the tapestry that hold our society in which we live. It doesn't deal with specific issues in our society. That's really different. And that's something we should pay attention to. What is the content? I'd like to, you know, we're very pro-capitalism in our country, which I'm also modified maybe instead of pure capitalism. I'd like to see a safety net for people in a way that's kind for people as the overall net of our nation. But within that, we can have various economic systems which people want or don't want and can vote on, because we're a democracy and we ought to have the right to vote on what kind of economic system we have. But within the container of that social safety net, That's what Move to Amend is dealing with. And that's our context that we deal with. And so as a church, we ask, what is the nature of our church? And who are we? And how are we going to respond? And recently, we've been hearing at least two sermons on Know Your Place. And I thought that was kind of cute. Do you know your place? I immediately went back to a child with one of my uncles who was quick to put us in our place if we got out of our place, because he was the prim and proper uncle rather than the playful uncle. But do you know your place? And last week, when I brought up this idea that there was no such thing as a woman, got quite a few responses, and somebody said they almost came up out of their chair and was going to come get me to say that there's no such thing as a woman, and talked about the meaning that in our society there are roles that women can play, and if they don't play in one of these roles, they really don't exist. But the point was that when you are born, you move into a particular role, and that's your function. It doesn't matter your spirit, your energy, your creativity, all of that's irrelevant. You move into a role, so you cut away who you truly are. So during this week, I was reviewing and rereading a poem that I like. It's about work, and it's called Coming Close. And it starts out like this. It starts out, "Take this quiet woman. She has been standing before a polishing wheel for over 3 hours. And she lacks 20 minutes before she can take a lunch break. Is she a woman?" he asks. When we take a lion, say, from Sierra in Africa, and we take that lion, and we put that lion in a zoo behind bars, there is the question, is it a lion? That's a very real question. Does context help define what exists within the contexts? Does the prairie, the grass, the gazelle, the watering hole, is all of that part of the definition of lion? So that when we see a lion behind bars, pacing back and forth, do we see the true nature of what it means to be a lion? When we hear these words about a woman behind this polishing wheel, who, whether she wants to move or not, whether she needs to move or not away from the polishing wheel, she cannot, at least for another 20 minutes, her allotted break time. Is she a woman? Is it a lion? When there was a time in England where men tended to the fields and women, a lot of women tended to the loom and made things that were needed across England, and it wasn't an industry, it was kind of a village way of life. And then one day they built these factories to make things that the looms made, and they went around and destroyed all the looms, forcing these women into these factories. Is she a woman? We live in a culture that in your own mind, maybe you can think of some and tell me afterwards. I was trying to think, what are the intrusions that come into my mind? And I'm stuck with this Supreme Court decision and trying to understand the culture that I live in and what shapes my inner mind. And I was trying to go over who governs our nation. We first would say government, but then who structures our society? And we would certainly have to say that businesses structure our society. And then I had to say, okay, here we are as infants and we are born. And what is intrusive in terms of business in our society? I don't know how many of you have seen Elizabeth Warren's The Collapse of the Middle Class. great, great piece. And what she says from 1970 to today, it's a fairly recent thing, she says, even though we're making more money today, we have less disposable income. Essentially what she says, that our income now goes more toward fixed incomes. And I was trying to think, where do they go? How does that work? And if you could breathe a minute, and when I say these words symbolically representing other things, what's the feeling that goes with them? And it'll be different for everybody. Interest rates that can change at any time. I know ours has. Do you know what they did one time? I just have to tell the story. We had our credit card system set up on a automatic payment plan, so we could not be late. Because we knew if we'd be late, we're going to be good citizens conform to this system. And we knew that if we were late, that would jump up over 10 points. And so we weren't going to do that. They shut down their system for banking repairs, turned the computers off. The very day they're supposed to draw our payment from our account, they couldn't draw it out. So 2 days later, they drew it out and said we were late and changed their interest rate and wouldn't change it. Bad. Well, it's true.
Very convenient.
That was very convenient. Now, when you do that to a million people, that makes a lot of money. But the point I want to make is that is now in my head. It is now in me that my life can change, and the extra money that it cost us for that to happen stops me from buying bait for fishing. Not quite, but buying bait for fishing. Or it stops me from something. Okay, but now that's in me, that I am powerless to fight that. That's in me. Our mortgages. The electioneering money pouring in from different places. Advertising industry designed to manipulate us. The pollution that we accept every day as normal. Our water. The air we breathe. I was down at a community event in Palm City listening to the old-timers talk about 30 years ago, talking about how the water used to be crystal clear. But now it's normal. It's not. And then you hear the old-timers saying, I wouldn't eat anything out of there as I'm thinking about where to put my blue crab traps. You know, I wouldn't. That's in me. That's there. The war that many of us didn't want and saw no need for and didn't believe we really had an excuse for, except we knew if they went to war, they were going to war for profit, and that's the belief we had. And others had different beliefs. Maybe they're right, maybe I'm right, I don't know. But that's the belief I went with, that this was really a profit-making enterprise, not something other than that. Certainly not to spread democracy. So I wasn't there. So now that's in me, that my voice in this democracy has no power there. All the deaths. Combat deaths, civilian deaths, they're there, that's in me. The stories of all the injuries from the soldiers, brain injuries, amputations, and then the lack of care for these people, that's in me. The threat against Social Security, now that I just turned 56, it's having some reality to me. The threat is there, is in me. We were just reading the privatization of prisons, hospitals, health care. That's in me. I'm not standing at the polishing wheel in a factory that shaped that woman's world, that moved that poet to ask the question, is she a woman? I'm standing here, but all these things are in me and shape my imagination and shape my inner world. And I've numbed part of myself out so I can exist in this culture. Numbed out part of who I am to exist, to be a subject of this kingdom. and not to challenge certain things. I have numbed it out. So I stand here and say, when I'm looking and reading and preparing for this the sermon, saying, am I human? Am I real? Am I how do I relate to this world? What are the needs that I have? Who would I be if all the list I just read? Who would I be if I had the capacity, and I work for that capacity, to put them out of my head to get a sense for who I am and how I would like to express myself in this world? How many of us truly have found a place of freedom, of mental freedom? How many of us have truly found that place to discover who we really are? Or do we have dreams and fantasies wishing to find out who we really are? Slavoj Žižek, we've talked about this philosopher a bit earlier, he said in that movie, The Shawshank Redemption, you remember that movie, a prison movie where people get into prison and they hope to get out and they dream to get out and their life's going to be better than this. And he says those folks are using a delusion. They really have no sense of reality. And he said that, I forget the guy's name in the movie, but Tim Robbins, when he played the Mozart song, he said that was the only real peace at that moment in time because he was resigned. This was his place. And in his place, he wanted to experience something beautiful. There was no hope to be beyond that. And how do we bring ourselves to be there? How do I get free? And I must admit, I'm more of, on this issue, a Bob Marley fan than a Kenneth Patton fan. Now, Kenneth Patton is a Unitarian Universalist minister and wrote many things, and he wrote the reality in his little piece, The Reality of Freedom. He says, we are free. No presence or power in the universe controls us. And I'm going, no. Before you were born, and this is the difference that we'll get to in a minute, the heroic journey and hero journey. Before you were born, there are ideas and concepts coming towards you from your mother, father, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, whoever there. The sooner, before you're even out of the womb, these ideas and thoughts are coming towards you and are on you. And when you are growing up, you wear the coat, you wear the robe of these ideas, whether they match your true self or not. You are in negotiation of the existence of your true self from the beginning. You're a girl, you're a boy, you like pink, you like blue, you're going to be a nurse, you're going to be a teacher, you're going to be the president of the United States, you're going to be a lawyer, you're going to be a doctor, you're going to be a carpenter, whatever it might be, but it's on you. Bob Marley, I think, has a little different take on it in his redemption song. Emancipate yourself. I wish I could sing, because... So those ministers who can preach and sing, boy, they got it. You don't want to hear me. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. So I'm going with Bob Marley on this one. So here's the image. We have our true selves, what it means to be human, in us. We cannot not have it in us. It's in us. The woman who stands in the factory at the polishing wheel, what it means to be a woman is in her. The lion who is captured and put in the cage, what it means to be a lion is in the lion. It's in there. What it means to be a man, a male, it is in me. It is in there. How do I get at it? How do I nurture it? How do I become it? How do I create a church and be participating in a church that recognizes these difficulties so that this is a place of becoming? This is a place where we can take those robes off that have been placed upon us to decide whether we want to wear them or not. Maybe I got some good stuff I want to keep. from my history. Maybe I got to, I remember one time I was in a homiletics class preaching at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and there's this particular passage that says, "It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me." And I was also taking transactional analysis class, learning about scripts and roles. And so I got up there and I said, "Wait a minute. I don't want to crucify the I that's in me. Whatever it means to really truly be me, what I want to do is I want to crucify the roles I've internalized from culture that are not congruent with the I of who I am." And I thought that was big stuff. Boy, they didn't like that. It's the I. You've got to crucify the I in you. And I'm going, "No, I don't want to do that." It's because I had good parents. I had a good sense of self-esteem from them. Thank you, Mom. Yes. I wasn't willing to do that. Well, I didn't know I was in a particular seminary that taught that, and there were other seminaries that didn't teach that. So are there these roles, and the roles for women, the roles for men. We've talked before about the dysfunctional family roles, the dependent, the enabler, the hero, the scapegoat, the lost child, the mascot, the jokester. In our culture, we can look at it, our culture, and if you think, what does he mean by those kind of family roles? Our culture also plays a role. Look at the use of the scapegoating process in our culture. It's all over the place. African Americans, poor, Muslims, red-headed left-handers, stepchildren. You know, if you're in a group that's predominantly brown-eyed as opposed to blue-eyed, the blue-eyed will get scapegoated. You know, we just the scapegoating principle is in our culture. It is a role in our culture. Therefore, it will be a role also within families. Sitting around at this table with the family once and just kind of listening and how they bonded together was to have a negative object. Didn't matter what it was, a person, a cause, party, political election, it didn't matter. But they would talk about this negative object, and they would all talk about it, and that way they could agree. And whenever they weren't talking about something outside that family or outside that house, they would fight. So they realized that they need this negative object in order for them to get along. And when I watched that, I went, well, that's how that works. So then it was easy to manipulate. Whenever I got in an argument with one of them, I just mentioned the negative object, and her tension with the negative object, it didn't bother me anymore. So you learn how to do things. But what that does is it distracts us from the real issues. When you have a negative object, you're not really looking at what's going on. You're being distracted from the issues that we need to be paying attention to. And as long as I'm manipulated into not being human, to not being male, to not being a man, to not being a woman, to not being a line, as long as we're being manipulated not to be what we are, we will never be able to deal with the true issues at hand. We have to have a place that we can come to where we can drop those roles, where we can become our deepest selves, where we can nurture others to do so. However, I don't even know I have that robe on from culture. And if it's not a particularly negative or discomforting role, I will defend that I don't have a role, that I have a robe on that's not really who I am. I don't know what happened to my brother. We both had the same mothers, and my life was really good. It must be him. That makes sense. I don't know what's going on in this country. I've had every opportunity to accomplish these things. I've worked hard in my life to accomplish these things. I don't know what's wrong with those people. They have the same opportunities as me. We live in the same country, the same values. It doesn't matter if I live in the middle of the state of Florida and the textbook I get is 30 years old. even if I'm unaware that I have this stuff on. Yeah, I remember the first time they said, it was at Emory graduate school, and they said, this culture is set up so white males get preference. And I went, no way is that true. What are you talking about? And I just listed all the negative things in my life. Then later on, I thought, oh, there is a difference. And white males do get preference in this culture. It's just true. And then when I realized that, I didn't fully understand it, but I committed to do the best that I can to try to understand it. Because if that's true, if there is a position in this culture that is preferenced, privileged, that means there's somebody that is not. And I don't want to be part of a system, even though I don't fully understand it, I don't want to be part of a system where I contribute to the discomfort, the dis-ease, the meanness, the cruelty of another, unconsciously or consciously. I don't want to be part of a system that says, well, thank God that woman's got a job, even if it's at the factory, because what would she do if she didn't? And she's going to be there forever, and she's going to never know her truest self. And I'm grateful that I can go to a store and buy something cheap. I don't want to be that. So how do I take the courage to say, even though I don't fully understand myself, the influences on me, I'm going to join a spiritual pilgrimage to discover that so that I can ensure I'm not participating in a system that's oppressive to others. Having the courage to do that, even though I don't know what it means. I hope that's who we are and what this church is about.